Today we're going to talk about the big dedication ceremony and celebration of Solomon's Temple that took place. And we need to place it in its context chronologically. And to do that, we need to go back to 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 37 and 38, which gives us a summary of the building time period. 1 Kings 6:37 says, in the fourth year, now that's the fourth year of Solomon, which was also going to be the 480th year of the Exodus. We know that from another passage. So in the fourth year, the foundation of the house of He Who Is was laid in the month Ziv. And we even know that it happened on the second day of that second month of the Jewish year. So we're talking about the springtime. Now, because it was the 480th year, we know that that following fall would have kicked off the 63rd sabbatical year since Israel's entry into the Promised Land. So that would be a year off of work, including construction work for the temple. And because it was the 63rd sabbatical year, that would have been immediately followed by the ninth year of Jubilee, which would be an additional year off from all of the normal labors of the Israeli people. So 2 years in a row, right after the foundation of the temple was laid, there would have been no construction done on it. Now, verse 38. In the 11th year, that would be the 11th year of Solomon, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished in all its parts and according to all its specifications. He was 7 years in building it. So 7 calendar years, from the 4th to the 11th year of King Solomon, but only 5 actual construction years were involved in putting this thing together. Now, they do not instantaneously have the dedication ceremony after the building was finished. The reason for that seems to be that they needed to do a lot of the finishing work. They needed to bring in all of the cast objects, the bronze and gold objects that were being made elsewhere, and get them put in place, and maybe even do some training of all of these priests on how they were going to do their work, not at the tabernacle and not at the tent of the Ark of the Covenant, which was located in the palace grounds of David's palace, but rather in this big, new, massive compound that was the Temple of Solomon. And so that's going to take a little while. We won't get to the actual dedication service until the following year, the 12th year of Solomon, which would be 970 BC, and in the fall of that year. And we'll see the dating here in just a little bit. Now, chapter number 7, we will get back to the first part of chapter 7 later, because it focuses on the building project for Solomon's complexes for his own personal use and the use of his government. And that takes place in its completion after the temple is up and running. All right, so now we jump ahead to 1 Kings chapter number 8. Chapter number 8. And there is a parallel that you can find in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, starting at verse number 2. And there's some distinctions made between the two, but they generally agree perfectly in the details but sometimes give additional bits and pieces. And so I would really recommend that you try to look at both at some point in your pursuits of the Word of God. But we're going to focus on the chapter 8 of 1 Kings at this point. Then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes, the leaders of the fathers' houses of the people of Israel, before King Solomon in Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is out of the city of David, which is Zion. So if you are trying to look at these things on a map, where the Temple Mount is today, the temple building of Solomon is somewhere in the general vicinity of where the Muslim Golden Dome of the Rock is located today. Probably somewhere in that general vicinity. The Palace of David is south of the Temple Mount, several hundred feet, at the very northern edge of the ancient city of Jerusalem. And they are going to now move in great pomp and circumstance the Ark of the Covenant up the hill, up the slope of the Temple Mount, northward from David's palace, and place it with this great amount of ceremony inside the Holy of Holies, the most holy place of the brand new temple complex. And everybody's invited to come out for this. The leaders of the tribes, the leaders of every household, so all the adult men, it's picked at such a time where all the adult men were expected to be at Jerusalem anyway. For worship. So they're going to bring up the Ark of the Covenant, and verse 2, all the men of Israel assembled to King Solomon at the feast of the month, or in the month of Ethanim, which is the seventh month. So the seventh month of the Jewish year, it's associated with the fall time, it's after the harvests are all in, and it is kicked off on the first day of the seventh month with the Feast of Trumpets. And that's basically a call to assemble. The Feast of Trumpets is the call to assemble for the great fall feast. On the 10th day of that seventh month is Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, and is the day on which Israelis are expected to fast and consider soberly that if they do not have their sins dealt with by the blood of the lambs offered at the altar and at the temple, then they will have to pay for their sins with their own blood. So it's a very, very reflective day in this time period. And it will fall during the dedication week of this new temple. So very important that they're all here for that special day. And then on the 15th day of the seventh month, that's the beginning of the Feast of Tabernacles, where all the Israelis are expected to camp out and remember that their ancestors were once stuck out in the wilderness, in the desert, in temporary housing, but they were on their way to the promised land. And so the Israelis every year from the 15th through the 21st remember that they're now in their promised land, and they are celebrating God's blessings of the past year inside that promised land. So the dedication week of this new temple is set up in such a way that it will climax in connection with the kickoff of this Feast of Tabernacles, and it's going to be the most amazing celebration that Israel's had since they came into the Promised Land. All right, verse number 3. All the elders came, and the priest took up the ark, and they brought up the ark of He Who Is, the tent of meeting, and all the holy vessels that were in the tent, and the priests and the Levites brought them up. Now, there's not much said about this, but it seems as if, in connection with the beginning of worship services at the tabernacle, they officially close up all of the worship services at the beginning of the worship services at the temple, on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. They close up officially all the worship services that were taking place at the tabernacle at Gibeon. They take it down completely, and they bring all of those holy items up to the Temple Mount, and presumably they store them away in the treasuries of the temple. And then they close down all the worship that's been happening at the shrine tent of the Ark of the Covenant in the palace complex of David, and they bring all of those holy items up to the Temple Mount as well, and presumably put them all away in sacred storage. But the Ark of the Covenant, the throne of God, made back at the time of the Exodus, is brought into the most holy place of this new temple. And it seems as if it's the only item of the original items that is placed into the new temple. So they brought up the Ark of He Who Is, the tent of meeting, all the holy vessels that were in the tent, the priests and the Levites brought them up. So this will be the last time any of them have to carry any of those things, because now they have a permanent place of worship, not a temporary one. King Solomon and all the congregation of Israel who had assembled before him were with him before the ark, sacrificing so many sheep and oxen that they could not be counted or numbered. Now later, there will be a number put on some sacrifices, but that seems to be the sacrifices made for the celebratory meal that will take place as this week of dedication of the new temple takes place. Verse 6, then the priest brought the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is to its place in the inner sanctuary of the house, in the most holy place, underneath the wings of the Gerubim. For the Gerubim spread out their wings over the place of the Ark, so that the Gerubim overshadowed the Ark and its poles, and the poles were so long that the ends of the poles were seen from the holy place before the inner sanctuary, but they could not be seen from outside, and they were there to this day, or they are there to this day. Now, both 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles use that phrase, and they are there to this day, which means that when the prophets wrote these words down, the Temple of Solomon was still intact, and the Ark of the Covenant was still present inside that temple. And we know historically that the Ark of the Covenant disappeared from history right around 605 BC, and then the temple then was destroyed at the command of God by the Babylonians in 587 BC. So these things were written down well before the temple was destroyed. Now, the description that we have here is a reminder of what we went over the last couple of days, that the Holy of Holies, the most holy place inside the temple, that 20 by 20 by 20 cubit holy place that was so magnificently decorated. It had that mirror effect. as well as all of the carvings of cherubim and palm trees and gourds and all the other beautiful things that were represented on the wall. And then it's got the two massive olive wood cherubim whose wings touch the walls, and the wings are overshadowing the Ark of the Covenant at the center of this room, right underneath where the wings touch. So the Ark gets put into that very special place. The poles are left in their positions for when the Ark was carried in there. And they're pointing forward toward the opening into the holy place where the priests do their work every day. They can be seen from there. And it's been suggested, and I think it's correct, that these poles provided the path by which the high priest would go around the altar of incense, cross the threshold into the most holy place, and then walk between these projected poles up to the very front of the Ark of the Covenant, facing the mercy seat. Because remember, the Ark of the Covenant is not a highly decorative storage box. It's the throne of God on earth. And so it's imagined, you know, it's pictured in the mind that God is seated on that throne and his voice projects from between the cherubim that are at the ends of that throne seat. And so the time of Yom Kippur, the high priest only goes in that day and sprinkles blood on that mercy seat inside of the most holy place. And apparently these carrying poles now served as the path to go in and come back out from the presence of God once a year. Now, we get another little bit of historical information here. Verse number 9. There was nothing in the ark except the two tablets of stone that Moses put there at Horeb, when he who is made a covenant with the people of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. Now, the book of Hebrews reminds us that earlier in Israel's history, there were three items inside the storage area of this throne of God. There were these two tablets of the second edition written by the hand of God of the Ten Commandments. Those are still here at the time that the ark is put in place into Solomon's temple. But there was also supposed to be the golden pot of one day's ration of manna. It's no longer there at the time of Solomon. Where is it? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that the book of Revelation tells us that the manna, this golden pot of one day's ration, is in heaven. That God, at some point, took it away. And he's reserving it as part of the promise that's found in the book of Revelation at the very beginning, that to he who overcomes, I will give of the manna that has been hidden away. And so I think that's what happened to it, and that's why it's missing from Solomon's temple. The other item was the rod of Moses and Aaron, the power rod that had turned into a serpent and that he used in doing all of the plagues of Egypt and the crossing of the Red Sea. That had been placed into the Ark of the Covenant probably after the death of Moses and Aaron. And now it's missing as well. And I would suggest to you, it also might have been taken by God into the heavenly realms to be stored there as perhaps the scepter of Jesus, the eternal Messiah. Because one other thing that we know is that Book of Revelation reveals that the Ark of the Covenant is also in the heavenly realm. Because at one point in the story of the book of Revelation, the heaven is opened And inside is the Ark of the Covenant. And I believe it will serve as the throne of Jesus on earth during the millennial reign and afterward inside the New Jerusalem. That's my very strong opinion. I offer it to you for what it's worth. And so I expect that Jesus will have all of these items in his control as eternity has him ruling and reigning as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. All right, so at least the Ten Commandment tablets are here in the Ark of the Covenant as they put it in place. Now, verse 10, I think, may get ahead of the story a little bit. And I'll explain to you why I think that in a little bit, but let me read it to you. It says, when the priest came out of the holy place, a cloud filled the house of he who is, so that the priest could not stand to minister before because of the cloud, because the glory of he who is filled the house of he who is. Now, when the first tabernacle was built and set up and dedicated, the first sacrifice offered was not ignited by human fire. It was ignited by the fire of God. And that's what made this a special place of sacrifice. And the Israelis were then supposed to keep that fire going throughout their history. Well, now, as they're getting ready to dedicate this new building to God's worship, they apparently are going to be expecting the same sort of sign from God that he accepts it for its intended purpose, which is to worship him. And so now let's jump over to 2 Chronicles chapter 5, verse number 11. 2 Chronicles 5, verse number 11, and talk about how that fire fell. It says, when the priests came out of the holy place, for all the priests who were present had consecrated themselves without regard for their divisions, and all of the Levitical singers, Asaph, Heman, and Jeduthun, their sons and kinsmen, arrayed in fine linen with cymbals, harps, and lyres, stood east of the altar with 120 priests who were trumpeters. So we've got all the different divisions of priests are here on this day. It's a massive celebration. And all the different courses of priests and Levites have representatives that are helping put the Ark of the Covenant in place. And then we've got lots of music that's going on as well, with 120 priests that are set aside specifically for trumpeters on this day. And they're east of the altar. Verse 13, it was the duty of the trumpeters and the singers to make themselves heard in unison in praise and thanksgiving to he who is. And when the song was raised with trumpets and cymbals and other musical instruments in praise to he who is, this is what they sang. This is the big repeated chorus of the day. For he is good, and his steadfast love endures forever. So this is the theme of the day. God is good. And his love, his special love of Israel, endures forever. Then it says that the house of he who is, was filled with a cloud, so that the priest could not stand to minister because of the cloud, for the glory of he who is filled the house of God. Now again, I think it's possible that our writer has jumped ahead of things just a little bit, because those same words are going to be repeated after Solomon's prayer that we're just now getting to. And that's when the fire will fall from God's hand onto the very first sacrifice that is laying on the altar as this dedication ceremony happens. Now, this is just the first day of 7 days total that's set aside for the dedication. And so Solomon is kicking it all off with his presence, and he's taking a great lead in the official celebrations. So the rest of today, which is not much time, and then tomorrow as well, we're going to read from Solomon's speech at the dedication ceremony. And it's actually more of a prayer that is then overheard by everybody that's present. Chapter 6 of 2 Chronicles, verse 1. Solomon said, "He who is has said that he would dwell in thick darkness, but I have built you an exalted house, a place for you to dwell in forever." And then the king turned and blessed all the assembly of Israel while all the assembly of Israel stood. And he said, "Blessed be he who is the God of Israel, who with his hand has fulfilled what he promised with his mouth to David my father, saying, 'Since the day that I brought my people out of the land of Egypt, I chose no city out of all the tribes of Israel in which to build a house, that my name might be there, and I chose no man as prince over my people Israel. But I have chosen Jerusalem that my name may be there, and I've chosen David to be over my people Israel.' Now it was in the heart of David my father to build a house for the name of he who is, the God of Israel. But he who is said to David my father, 'Whereas it was in your house to build a house, in your heart to build a house for my name, you did well that it was in your heart. Nevertheless, it is not you who shall build the house, but your son who shall be born to you shall build the house for my name. Now he who is has fulfilled his promise that he made, for I have risen in the place of David my father, and I sit on the throne of Israel as he who is promised, and I have built the house for the name of he who is, the God of Israel, and there I have set the ark in which the covenant of he who is that he made with the people of Israel." So Solomon sets the tone by saying God has kept his promise, because today finishes everything that God has promised up to this point.